Hello and welcome to another episode of Admit One with me, Antonia O'Brien, the podcast that's delving into the cinema viewing habits of industry insiders and film fanatics from across the arts.
James L. Brooks, who's the director, he said that if he didn't have Holly, this film wouldn't exist. This film was her.
On today's episode, we have the director of the Bechdel Test Fest, Karina Antrobus, joining me in the studio.
One of the great things about this film as well is the soundtrack, and I think most of the black films that came out in the 90s had fantastic soundtracks.
Karina, thank you so much for your time today. How are you doing?
Not bad. Very well, thank you.
Now, for those of us, embarrassingly, myself included, who do not know what the Bechdel test is, what exactly is it?
So it's a very low bar measure that is applied to any film, and it signals if a film has two women in it that have a conversation with each other about something other than a man. Simple as that.
I mean, what I think is so smart with those outlines is how simple and how easy it is to apply that to films that I've watched recently.
Yeah.
Now, you've set up, you're the director of the Bechdel Test Fest. Mm-hmm. When did you set this up?
So I set up the Bechdel Test Fest in 2014, and that was coinciding with the 30th anniversary of the Bechdel Test, which a lot of people were quite surprised at, that it's actually that old. It was inspired by Alison Bechdel, who is a cartoonist from America, and she is the brainchild and animator behind Dykes to Watch Out For, which is a very popular cartoon. She also did graphic novels Are You My Mother and Fun Home, which are fantastic reads. I really do recommend them. But the Bechdel test was actually inspired by one particular cartoon in Dykes to Watch Out For, which had two women walking down the street together, having a conversation, going, hey, should we go to the cinema? And the other one says, thing is, I don't only go to the cinema if the film will pass this particular rule. And then she reinstates the rule, and then they basically say, oh, well, we can't go to the cinema, because they find out that none of the films that are on pass the test. And this really captured the imagination of people, and they were like, hang on a minute, that's a point. How many films actually do pass it? And then the Bechdel test was born, and we're starting to apply it to films ever since.
It's fascinating, and like I said earlier, it's just not hard to get your head around, but shocking how few films, you know, can pass it. So when did you first become aware of it?
So I'm also a film writer, and I was doing my end of month roundup of good things happen for women in film for a blog that I was writing for at the time. And I was doing my usual research of feminism and film, and I came across the A rate. And in Sweden, they were using this A rate as a classification system to say if a film passed the Bechdel test. I was like, what's the Bechdel test? And then I found out what the Bechdel test was. And in at the time, it was about three cinemas, independent cinemas in Sweden, that were actually using this A rate to signal if a film actually had a prominent female protagonist. And it really, like yourself, it really captured my imagination. It's like, that's so interesting. And the fact that they're actually using it in Sweden as a classification system to say, hey, this has the bare minimum of female representation, I thought it was great. And it's funny as well. It's not, I mean, it's supposed to be taken with a pinch of salt. If a film passes the test, it doesn't mean it's a feminist film. If a film doesn't pass the test, it doesn't mean it isn't. So Alison Bechdel herself, although she's, you know, quite bewildered and proud at inventing this thing, she's also like, well, don't take it too seriously, because this is all just supposed to be fun and games, and I'm a cartoonist, so, you know. But that's the point. It says so much, and many a truth said in jest.
So, Karina, take me back to the beginning. Why did you set Bechdel Test Fest up?
I was angry. I was angry at the industry, and more frustrated. You know, I was working for a company, well, a big company doing film marketing for independent cinema on a very large platform. And I really took pride in putting eyes onto these brilliant films that weren't getting as much exposure as they deserved. And I would go to meetings pretty much every week. And in those meetings, we had to watch trailers all day and basically pick what films we were going to choose for the platform. And I was just so overwhelmed with how many of these films were male-led and action-packed and when it came to the female-led films, they were given less prominence. They were like, oh, well, this one, it's gone straight to DVD, but you don't need to worry about that one so much. I was just like, wait a minute, but that's the one that I really like the sound of. Anyway, got made redundant, had some time on my hands, had a bit of cash in my pocket, and I was like, do you know what? I'm going to set up a film festival, because whilst I was doing my previous job, I was also doing film writing and getting the privilege to go to lots of film festivals, and I loved it. Going to film festivals is just one of my favourite things. You're just surrounded by so many people that are into the same thing. You're watching so many films that you might not necessarily catch at your local multiplex. You know, you get to talk to artists and directors and actors, and it's just a great place to be. And I thought, what? How good would it be to work at one of these things? But I didn't have any experience in that, so I thought, well, I don't have any experience in working at a festival, so I'm not going to get a job, so why not start one?
I love that, because much, you know, with so many jobs and careers, it is a case of sort of defining your dream role and going into, you know, establishing it yourself because it didn't exist already. What have been highlights for you of the Bechdel Test Fest? You know, moments that you're like, this is awesome. I can't believe this is my doing.
We put on the London premiere of Beyond the Lights over the summer of 2014, and it was really special. So this particular film, directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood, she did Love and Basketball, which is a fantastic, fantastic film as well. And her latest film came out, and it went straight to DVD. And this was unheard. Like, I just didn't understand why such a great film with such a great cast. So Gugu Mbatha-Raw was in it, Minnie Driver was in it, and it was directed by somebody that is very well established and very well known. And again, kind of with my marketing hat on, I thought, this deserves to be at the cinema. And you've got that presumption that straight to DVD means it's not good enough for the cinema. And I just wanted to get behind this title. And I'd tapped into the conversations that were happening around this film going straight to DVD. And a lot of my other film journalist friends were very miffed as well. And Gina Prince-Bythewood actually was on Twitter really rallying and saying, why, you know, she didn't even understand why this film was going straight to DVD in the UK. And it had a limited release in the US.
I was going to say, but it was released in different countries.
Yes, it was an American film, and it went to cinemas in the US. But when it came to the UK, it basically said to me and my team that because it was basically, it's about a young black woman, Gugu Mbatha-Raw is the lead, and her tricky road to fame as an R&B pop singer. It's such a great, crowd-pleasing, romantic, melodramatic, musical film. It ticks loads of boxes.
Which in the past have done so well.
Yeah, exactly. And with Gina being a black female director, we just felt that she wasn't given the confidence that she and her work deserved. So contacted Gina through Twitter. After a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and trying to fight with the distributor, we finally, it was a bit of a struggle, but we finally got the rights to screen it, and with the help of Pitch House Cinemas, who kind of believed in what we were doing as well. And we put it on sale, and it sold out pretty quickly.
That's incredible. What a coup for
you. Yeah.
I'd love to know, what's the first film that made an impact on you?
It's funny, I haven't always loved films. I mean, I have always enjoyed narrative art. But growing up, from quite a working class background, we just didn't go to the cinema that much. It was an expensive hobby. We sat and watched Tom and Jerry and Westerns with my dad on the weekends. And we watched TV, like we watched the Desmonds and things like that. But I always remember, because my mum let me stay up quite late occasionally, and I do remember Raising Arizona always being on for some reason. And I just remember that really sort of seeping into my soul somehow. So every time I see it, I just really go back to being young, sitting by the fire and watching Raising Arizona and then hoping that my mum won't send me to bed.
Well, it's something I always think with films, much like with fragrance and music, they can really, really trigger a memory.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is how this podcast was really born, is to get interesting film lovers, industry insiders to come and talk more about ones they love. Mm. How difficult did you find it to pick just three favourite films?
Oh, do you know what?
It's quite tricky.
It's incredibly tricky, and it's actually impossible for me. So what I did, I told myself, is like, well, how do I feel right now? Mm-hmm. What are my favourite three films right now? Because if you ask me next week, it will be different. Or if you I mean, maybe not next week, but next month or next year, or if you'd asked me 3 years ago. But your sensibilities change and your likes change and you discover more films, obviously, and I watch a lot of films nowadays. And it's also just how you're feeling at the time and what's relating to you soulfully and what characters are in certain films that you're like, yes, that's the one that I really need to go back to kind of have a relationship with. So, yeah.
Karina, you have led me perfectly into asking you, what is your first film choice?
So we'll go from the oldest to the newest, and I think we'll start with Broadcast News, which is one of my favourite films that I watched, not in the 80s, but actually last year for the first time. As soon as I watched it, it really, really spoke to me. Holly Hunter's character is just fantastic. She's basically works at a TV news broadcast station, and she's an incredibly ferocious, neurotic character who really just wants to, she's excellent at her job and she really wants to do as well as she possibly can, but then there's a love triangle that's going on, which is hilarious. It's a rom-com, and it's between herself, William Hurt's character, and Albert Brooks's character. So all throughout the film you're wondering which guy she's going to pick, and it's that classic story of the tall, charming doofus like one, or the not as attractive but really, you know, funny and cute. So there's that going on, but ultimately it's not necessarily the love story that I'm in love with. It's her character of being a career woman. This is a brilliant film in the workplace, and I just remember so much of my youth wanting to be in an office and be all self-important, and I think one of the best things about the film is when she's on her own. So the scenes where she's on her own and she's just in tears because she just can't quite take all the stress that's going on. I mean, well, she can take it, but she has these moments where she just lets loose and cries. And I think this is an excellent example of a messy, awkward career woman and who's just allowed to be as such on screen. And we don't get enough of that. But despite that she's this messy character, she's also very beautiful, and she's feminine yet she's ferocious. So she's incredibly complex, and that's what I loved so much. I relished in this film. It's really fantastic.
And she's a woman in the workplace, and there's, you know, in the beginning she gets that promotion and she's producer, and there's that idea which was so key still now, but so key in the 80s, of shattering the glass ceiling. So did you find it an empowering film?
Absolutely, yes, because it showed you that a woman who has incredibly aggressive career drive can still be feminine and cute and attractive, because we're led to believe that career women are bitches or horrible battle axes, whereas she was just like good at her job and had these men falling at her feet, but she didn't really notice all that. She's really struggling with the fact that she's actually always right.
Tricky question, but do you have a favourite scene in the film? One that stuck with you?
I do love, I can't remember which character it is, but there's a character that's just kind of having a go at her, and because she's just being this neurotic woman, and he says, oh, and he's being passive aggressive. He's just like, it must be so hard being right all the time. And rather than take offence to that, she's just like, yes, it's so hard. And it's so like, oh, brilliant.
So often that sort of film textbook love triangle, more often than not, it is two female roles and
yes,
one male. So
exactly.
Do you think that's another way this film's quite refreshing? It was made in 87. So, you know, two guys vying for the girl's attention. Yeah. It was fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. And Holly Hunter is this film. And James L. Brooks, who is the director, he said that if he didn't have Holly, this film wouldn't exist. This film was her, and she just completely drove it. And I think I saw an interview and somebody said, well, what would you do if you couldn't have Holly? It was just like, this film wouldn't exist.
There wouldn't have been a Broadcast News. Burning question. Does this film pass the Bechdel test?
Yes.
It does, yes!
It does. There are a lot of shrieking women running around the office with VHSs in their hand trying to get the job done, and it's fantastic.
I am desperate to know about your next choice, because now I also want to see which passed the Bechdels. What's your next choice?
Set It Off, and this film definitely passes the test, and it came out in 1997. It's directed by Gary Gray, who did Straight Out of Compton, and he's also done lots of music videos for the likes of R. Kelly. But Set It Off is a fantastic female-led film, and it really shows the plight of female friendships and young black women and the struggles that they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis in America. And it's still so fresh, despite it being in 1997, what with what's going on in America at the moment with unfair police brutality, you can still connect the dots, and it feels incredibly fresh and still so relevant. But ultimately, this is a story of female friendship. There's four women, four fantastic actresses. We've got Vivica A. Fox, Queen Latifah, this was one of her breakthrough films, and she's fantastic in it. Jada Pinkett Smith, who is the lead, and Kimberly Elise, who is a young mother. And each of them represent a different struggle of black women in America, and they all come together because ultimately they are battered down by the patriarchy, and they have to do what they have to do in order to survive. But it's funny, it's sweet, it's incredibly sad. There's so much drama going on. There's basically a bunch of black women get together, and in order to get by, they find themselves robbing banks. One of the great things about this film as well is the soundtrack, and I think most of the black films that came out in the 90s had fantastic soundtracks as well. And the 90s was a golden age for black films at that time with predominantly black casts. And there's a scene where Stoney, Jada Pinkett Smith, is escaping, and she's on the bus, and just this look that she gives the cop who has been on her plight for the last hour or so, looks at her, she looks at him, and the music starting playing, and if you don't cry, you're dead inside. But it's that moment where he has the option to let her go, because he knows that if he catches her, she will die, because she is not going to give up. She's not going to surrender. She's an incredibly spirited woman, and he just gives her the look. She gives him the look, and I'll leave it at that, as if I haven't broken it enough.
You've got
already,
me on, right on the edge of my seat.
It's so tense and beautiful.
And it all syncs together, and you're right with what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, what struck me with this is it's a group of women leading a heist, which is, of course, conventionally male.
Yeah, when you so Queen Latifah herself, the reason why she was actually sold to this script was because it was women going out and doing man stuff, and she's like, hang on a minute, this is badass, I'm going to go out there and do this. And she's perfect for the role as well, so it really all fits together beautifully.
It doesn't always have to be romantic leads and romance and fairy tales. It can be girls being badass.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So Karina Antrobus, we started with the oldest film, and now you're bringing us up to 2016. What's your last choice?
So the last film is Moonlight. And it's one of my favourite films I've seen in many years, in fact. It was very, very special. I got the privilege of watching it at the London Film Festival with a Q&A. So the director, Barry Jenkins, was there. Janelle Monáe, who is a character in the role, and a singer that I used to love, well, still do love listening to, she was there. But yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic film. And you could kind of liken it to the black version of Boyhood, but different in the way that it charts this coming of age movie of this young black man discovering his sexuality and his place in the world. But it really tackles the issues and the problems that affect young black men in America again. And it's so evocative, and the cinematography is so beautiful. It positively purrs. It's shot in a way that is very quiet, and the acting really speaks for itself without having to be too dramatic in the actual acting, but teamed up with the cinematography and the mood of it, it's just so special. Again, there's a part of me that doesn't want to explain it too much, because I loved going in there blind and not knowing actually what this was about.
In my opinion, some films really stick with me for days and I can't get them off my mind. And then on the other hand, some films I leave the cinema and I never think about them again. One of those films that just really made an impact on you?
Absolutely. Moonlight stuck with me. I woke up the next morning feeling nourished. I felt fed. I felt happy that this film was in existence. I felt that there was these stories that are very rarely told on screen about masculinity and sexuality that young black men deal with and it was being represented in this beautiful, enjoyable, accessible film. And just the special way that you have the different chapters of this guy's life. So you get to see him as a young boy, teenager, and then an adult, played by three different characters. And I don't quite know how, but there is something incredibly special in the way that all those three different actors still somehow manage to act the same, even though they don't necessarily actually look like each other. There's a silver thread that is really a testament to the quality of the actors here that have really presented this one character.
This film has, you know, part unknown, part stellar cast.
Yeah.
Were there any standout performances for you?
Yes. I mean, it's hard to say which character, when ultimately they have a synergy and they're all together. But Naomi Harris was a fantastic character. But what was interesting to me at the Q&A was that she herself, as one of the few women that are actually in the film, I mean, this is a film about a young man, so, you know, we'll let it pass. And I actually don't think it passes the Bechdel test, but again, it's fine. But Naomi Harris afterwards said that she herself, as an actor, does try to stay clear from films that may represent black women in a negative way. So she there gets the script and it's about a crack addict woman with this kid and she's a single parent. And so she, you know, alarm bells started ringing. But then when she read the script and really got swept up with the quality of it, and then she said that she had spent, her preparation was to watch loads of YouTube clips of women who were crack addicts and how she then felt the responsibility to portray this and how important it was for somebody to portray these in film.
For us to be educated.
Yeah, yeah. And just she realised once she'd done the research and read the script how important this role was and how much she wanted to be a part of this film.
Well, the critics, I mean, I haven't seen Moonlight yet, but off the back of talking to you, Karina, I'm now desperate to see it. Yeah. Stunning, electrifying. It's had 5 stars all round. Yeah. It sounds like it's a very important film.
It is a very important film. But what's great about that is that we can talk about important films because they give underrepresented groups representation. But what's great about this is that not only is it important, it's bloody excellent.
Mm.
And it's really, really enjoyable. And at the Q&A that I was in as well, somebody put up their hand and a young black man said, thank you to Barry Jenkins. Thank you for making us look so beautiful. And, you know, not a dry eye in the house type thing. But it's also, you know, when you look at the production of it, it's really interesting because this was his second film. Medicine for Melancholy was his first film, which on a complete shoestring budget, he still managed to create this very evocative love story. He's the master of subtlety. And there are some incredibly romantic moments in Moonlight and Medicine for Melancholy where nothing's actually happening, but the actors are just seething this emotion and it's beautiful. And you can feel the tension. And you're like, what? The thing that's going to happen next is going to be a pivotal moment in these characters' lives.
I don't think this is a rule I can apply to every trailer I've watched, but there is even a sense of tension and tenderness in
Absolutely.
What 90 seconds of the trailer. So that is a film I'm so looking forward to. Karina, before I let you go, I always ask my guests this question. Who would play you in the movie of your life? It's a good on the spot question.
It's a trick. Okay. I have two answers, and I'll say this only because us mixed race people all look the same. So after we did the premiere for Gugu Mbatha-Raw's Beyond the Lights, she invited me to her play of Nell Gwynn at the Shakespeare Globe, and I went along, and I just so happened to be holding a bunch of flowers that my boyfriend had bought me when he met me. So I went to
the kudos boyfriend.
I went to the after drinks and I was standing there with a bunch of flowers, and this guy came up to me and was like, well done, you were fantastic in the show tonight. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I realised, I was like, oh, he thinks I'm Gugu. I'll take that.
I'll take it. Thank you very much.
And I was like, how long shall I slap this up? And then I just stopped and was like, I'm not actually Gugu. And he's like, oh, but your sister's, right? I was like, no. So yeah, Gugu, she can have my, she can play my life any day.
Amazing. Amazing. Like a Samuel L. Jackson moment. Oh my God.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased.
He still gets that in restaurants.
Yeah,
I can imagine. Lawrence Fishburne. Dude, you were amazing in The Matrix. He's like, buddy, not me.
Yeah.
Karina, thank you so, so much for your time today. And if anyone wants to check out the Bechdel Test Fest, Karina, tell us the deets. Where can they go?
We are on all the usual modes of social media. So yeah, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. We have a website, bechdeltestfest.com. So yeah, just check us out. And we've got, basically, we put on events as and when we can. I do have a full-time job as well, so this is a bit of an elaborate hobby aside from that. So as much as I wish this could be I could dedicate my whole waking hours to this, I can't.
For now, it's a passion project, but I think this is definitely an organisation to watch, just to watch fly. Karina, thank you so, so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. Next week on Admit One.
One of my great pleasures post-festival is to just go to the cinema as a punter, you know, buy my ticket, get my popcorn.
Head of festivals at the BFI, Claire Stewart.
I mean, being the audience is something that I genuinely love.
Don't forget to subscribe to Admit One on iTunes for more movie memories from my stellar lineup of guests.
Admit One with Antonia O'Brien is an Audioboom production.